All right. Our last speaker is Ms. Carolyn Vizimanos, who is currently the leadership coordinator of the Los Angeles County Department of Public Health, specifically in the Organizational Development and Training Program. Ms. Vizimanos is responsible for the coordination in assessing, planning, implementing, and evaluating evidence-based leadership trainings and professional development activities for all levels of the 4,000 employees. This can't be 4,000 employees in Los Angeles Health Department, is it?
Oh, it's 4,000
employees. LA has that many employees?
We do.
Get out of here. In the...
Just the Department of Public Health alone.
Wow. In the department by assuring trainings necessary to build leadership capacity. She's going to talk about how to build team morale and creating a positive work environment in tough times.
Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
All right, it's almost there. You know, we've got dinner to go to, so I'll make this as quick as possible.
4,000 employees.
Yeah, with 4,000 employees.
You should have a good morale.
Oh, my gosh. However, in Los Angeles County, we serve 10 million residents in the county alone. And those 10 million residents, we are bigger than at least 42 states. So just imagine the hugeness of our county. Now, what I'm going to be talking about is not specifically any type of leadership model, but what I'm going to be talking about is really incorporating building a positive work environment instruction and facilitation into a comprehensive training program for new supervisors, for transitional supervisors, as well as our existing supervisors in Los Angeles County Department of Public Health.
Guys, can you see her over there?
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So by... Oh, okay. If this is what you want, can you still see me on this side? Okay. All right. By the end of this session, you'll be able to describe the training design for building a positive work environment. You're also going to be able to recognize opportunities for public health management to make a positive impact on their employees. And lastly, explain how building a positive work environment fits within the County of Los Angeles Department of Public Health strategic plan. All right, so the purpose of actually creating this curriculum is really to increase organizational effectiveness and reducing costs by training our public health supervisors and our managers to increase productivity and also employee satisfaction, as well as to identify strategies and methods for creating that positive work environment and really focusing on our employee strengths to yield the best performance from each of the employees. Our target audience, Department of Public Health supervisors and managers. All right, so building a positive work environment consists of 4 8-hour sessions. Okay, so we've got 32 hours invested in this one workshop. We conduct each session each month, so there's one session each month. And we have a 30 participants in each of these courses. All right, so before I move on to the nitty-gritty, I thought I'd share with you what the topic area is, because I'm sure that several of you are probably interested on what topic areas we talk about in each of these sessions of building a positive work environment. So I'll go through this quickly. Day one focuses on qualities for becoming a successful supervisor. And the topics of areas that we talk about include the following. Whoops. Okay. We talk about assessing, really a realistic look, assessing the current work environment within the changing culture and the image of the County of Los Angeles. We also talk about identifying the qualities of the best boss. And when I mean qualities of the best boss, We have several different activities that we have in each of our sessions. We talk about thinking about the best supervisor or boss that you've ever worked for. That's just one of the things that we talk about in our activities. We also talk about what did that person do or say, and how she treated people, and how did that boss of yours make you really feel? And what type of work environment did that boss of yours, that best boss, create? And also, we have given them the opportunity to describe the qualities and the working environment that made that person the best boss. We also talked about the importance of good morning every day and really building that positive work environment begins first thing in the morning. It really sets the tone for that environment at the workplace. And so we talk about that as well. We talk about really hearing employee issues and problems and really valuing employee input. We also talk about defining individual areas for communications improvement. Are we really clear about setting our expectations for our employees' roles? And also begin to start a dialogue with their own supervisors. So these participants that are supervisors and managers, we encourage them to really start a dialogue with their own supervisor and manager and inform them, hey, this is what I'm learning in building a positive work environment, and I'd like to share this with you. Now, day two of building a positive work environment focuses on supervising for employee performance. And so this is what's covered in day two. We talk about understanding why employees don't always do what they're supposed to do. And that is one area that we really focus on. Is it because employees are not appropriately trained? Is it because our expectations are not clear to our employees? Okay. We also talk about stating specific expectations for employee performance. We also talk about praising and criticizing employee performance, and also for ourselves, are we accepting praise and criticism on the receiving end? Okay, how do we accept praise and how do we accept criticism on our end as supervisors? Another thing that we talk about is assessing employee receptivity to performance feedback. We also talk about giving direction, delegation, and communicating with your staff in person as well as by email. So what are the effective communication routes when we're talking to or communicating with our staff? We also use a term called situational supervision where we determine how much over-the-shoulder supervision is enough because each of our employees are very unique. Not every employee is the same, so we have to treat them differently. So that's why we call that situational supervision. Are we coaching our employees? Does this employee need mentoring? Does this employee need counseling? So those are things to think about. We also talk about responding to employee and management requests. When you have to say no. Supporting your staff when they have to say no or when you have to make an exception after they have said no. And also finding the resources you need to supervise performance. Day three, it focuses on building strong work teams. The focus areas in day three, we talk about taking responsibility for improving morale and enhancing the day-to-day work climate. So it's really the supervisor's responsibility for improving morale with their team. We also talk about assessing how your team works together and supporting one another and confronting that non-team player and also handling employee-to-employee conflict. When should you be involved as a supervisor and when you should not be involved as a supervisor, and having human resources involved and having employee relations involved in that situation. We also talk about supervising people of diverse cultures and generations. In our Department of Public Health, we're dealing with four different generations, from traditionalists to millennials. We call it the tweeter generation also. And so how do we supervise people of diverse cultures? Because Los Angeles County is one of the most diverse counties in the nation. We also talk about supervising during times of organizational change and stress. We're dealing with our economic climate. We're dealing with hiring freezes. We also are dealing with our H1 activities right now. Our demand is so high that we've been working overtime. A lot of our staff have been working overtime. So those are things that we talk about in day three of building a positive work environment. These are other focus areas that we also discuss in day three. And lastly, day four, we specifically focus on keys to supervisory visibility as well as promotability. And what's covered in this is really facilitating their employee promotability and a professional development, as well as the supervisor's professional development themselves. We also talk about working among teams or on teams across public health, and also presenting ideas to management and to other folks on teams throughout the Department of Public Health, really to listen, to take action, and to really seek out your participation as a supervisor and input as well. Okay, so how does building a positive work environment training benefit our organization? Through research, we have found that it increases employee productivity and morale. It protects the supervisor and his team from widespread negativity, so there's a lot of decrease in gossiping. We also have found that it created an environment of open communication where everyone's contributions and their inputs have been valued. And of course, reduce employee turnover and absenteeism. Now, where does building a positive work environment fit into our existing training plan at the Department of Public Health? It has been incorporated into our Department of Public Health leadership framework, and we've also made it a mandatory course within our new supervisor development program as of last year. Now, if you did not attend a session this morning on the new supervisor development program, just to give you an idea of what it's all about, it is a 6-month comprehensive program for new, existing, and transitional supervisors in our Department of Public Health. And it consists of 15 mandatory HR courses, as well as eight leadership development courses, which include 7 Habits of Highly Effective People with Stephen Covey. We also have Emotional Intelligence, Public Speaking 1, and Public Speaking Level 2. We also have Crucial Confrontations as well, and Project Management. Now, another reason why we've made this mandatory is because new transitional and even our existing supervisors who have worked in the department do not have enough of the practical knowledge to deal with mentoring, to deal with coaching and supervising while appeasing to the needs of their own supervision. All right, so the course structure. It is a 4-day workshop, like I mentioned earlier. There's investment of 32 hours in the workshop, and the content really builds upon the activities from the previous session. The course is delivered as an instructor-led classroom format, and the participants are given a ton of group activities to put into practice the skills that they've actually learned. Also, we actually administer a pre-survey at the very beginning of the course, and it's really to test the effectiveness to impact their personal and their professional development, and for us to get an understanding of how often and how confident the participant is really carrying out those activities, those topic areas that I mentioned to you for each of those sessions. And then a post-survey is then administered at the end of our six-month new supervisor development program, which is approximately 2 months after the session four. So not only do we administer it at the six months, but also 6 months after that. So what we want to do is really to assess the improvement and the confidence level of these components over time. What we provide for our participants in the program is a binder, which includes a copy of the PowerPoint slides, the toolkit that has all of the tools and the skills tools for our supervisors, and then also a hard copy of the toolkit, as well as the group activity handouts. We have 9 objectives for our building a positive work environment course, and I'm not going to go through that. It's on the PowerPoint. And really, it's really getting into the nitty-gritty. How did we come about with this four-session building a positive work environment? We did a lot of research on best practices from organizations, from academia, even our own internal department. And we met with several Department of Public Health staff to really discuss the specific leadership training needs of our supervisors and managers. We also hired a very highly qualified consultant to work with our leadership team to create a course customized for our public health supervisors and managers. She actually is currently a she's part of the Quality and Productivity Commission member for Los Angeles County. We also have finally completed our curriculum, our version, in August of 2008. All right, so as indicated by our strategic plan, workforce excellence and employee development are very crucial to the growth and success of our organization. So through the process of training, we hope that if our managers and supervisors better implemented their supervisory skills, they can champion the decision-making process and really develop that strong workforce. So we were able to implement our first course in August of 2008, thank you, and here are our cohorts. We've already completed our first 3 cohorts of 30 participants, and we're going to be starting cohort 4 scheduled in 2010. And for each of those sessions, days 1, 2, 3, and 4, we've actually had evaluations for each of those sessions, and they were completed on the day of the training. We've also piloted this course to numerous DPH supervisors in 2006 and 2007. And we also conducted a focus group in April of 2007, actually in April 2008, not 2007, just April 2008, to get more detailed feedback on what we needed to do to make this course very effective for our new supervisors, our transitional supervisors, as well as our existing supervisors in the program. And so what we've had so far, as of November 2009, we've had 79 participants. 99% of our participants were very satisfied with the course. The one thing that they really mentioned about as a whole group was that they requested for the course to be mandatory to all supervisors and managers, not just in the program, but for all supervisors and managers and even program directors. They also, we offer the course at least twice a year because it's a 6-month program, so it's offered twice a year. And we've modified our tools based on the participant suggestions as well as our focus groups. And I think that's it so far. Yes, it is. That's it. And thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
My co-moderator, if you come up and just tell them who you are and a little bit about yourself. And I'm going to ask all the panel members if you can join us at the table up here. We need to add some more chairs. I think everybody can see more people over here.
Sit there, probably not.
Let's sit in the chair.
Well, my name is Kasuma Matamala, and I want to thank Dr. Kane for coming to really moderate this session, because she is quite the dynamic leader of APHA, and we're very... I'm from UIC School of Public Health. I'm also the co-chair of the Planning Committee for the Health Administration section that helps plan this session. So thank you for attending.
So we'll open it up for our questions for our panel members. Any questions? I've got, you know, I'm just doing this H1N1, so tell me, in all of your leadership models and everything, what do you do about staff who believe that their work hours are from 8 to 4 Monday through Friday? And that when you want to put on like an H1N1 clinic on a Saturday, and they got to work on a Saturday, and they're grumbling and whatever, and they don't really feel that they need to work on a Saturday, that if people want to get services, they should be able to come during the weekdays. How do you do that transformation, anyone? Talk to me about your practice settings.
Well, I think systems coaching would be to try and get some kind of consensus that there is a problem, that you've got a population that needs to be vaccinated, that they've got their responsibilities in terms of, that they've got their responsibilities in terms of their own families or their own jobs or whatever. And if you can reach some kind of consensus on the problem, then you've got to throw it back to the people who are responsible for solving the problem, which are the people who are going to do the vaccinations, on how are we going to solve this? What do you think is the solution or the best kind of way of approaching it?
So I'm coming back to you, and I'm telling you that their solution is that they will only work Monday through Friday, and they'll do a clinic, so they don't worry as much about the person who's afraid to take up their job in this economic climate, and they may lose their job.
Well,
and so it may be easier to serve people on Saturday than Monday through Friday.
Right.
And the other thing is, do you ask your employees that, I'm asking you to volunteer to work on the Saturday, but then you get very few people who are willing to work, and so then sometimes you're forced to make it mandatory.
And, well, go ahead.
Yes.
You're probably more familiar because you actually work in that environment.
Yeah. What's so wonderful about Los Angeles County, we have really a large camaraderie. It's actually working very well. We have so many point of dispensing sites throughout our Los Angeles County. We're over 400 square miles that we have to cover. And the one thing that we offer, that our administration is offering, is the opportunity for flex schedules as well as overtime schedules. So that really helps our supervisors and our managers, giving the opportunity for...
Now, most nurses and supervisors are exempt. So explain, how does that work with your exempt employees, at least where I am?
Well, in point of dispensing sites, we do have physicians and medical staff, nurses, uh-huh, that work in the point of dispensing sites. However, we also have other workers there, from IT to secretaries to, so they're all helping in the pods, and they do have a schedule from Monday through Friday. So, and we've also taken the oath, all of us as first responders in Los Angeles County, as disaster service workers. So what is in this disaster service worker oath is, we need to be prepared, so we need to make sure that our family is prepared before we're actually deployed into these point of dispensing sites, for example, H1N1. So we have all taken the oath as first responders that we have to go out there, either if it's on a Saturday, on a Sunday, whatever day of the week. We've been even working at nights. So
I think that you can, obviously, have policies and things like that around that, and have people do that. But I think what underlines a lot of this is employee engagement, getting them committed to the organization and to the mission of the organization. That goes mm-hmm. back to leadership and developing that shared vision about
right.
what's important, empathy, goodwill, all those things where they really feel like they're part of a team, a part of something, that you have a higher calling outside of themselves. So when we talk about engagement and transformation leadership, we're really talking about pulling people out of themselves and their own selfish interests into doing something outwardly or altruistic. And so that happens over time. It doesn't happen overnight, but it does happen. It's something that you develop over time, that trust. Again, knowing that if I do something for the supervisors and the supervisors, that they have my best interest in mind, and they're asking me to do this because it really is important and part of the strategic mission of the organization.
Yes?
I think in hearing some of those different things, making them part of the solution, mm-hmm. and then you can build the engagement on that. Mm-hmm. Listening to you describe that, and we've dealt with some of the same issues, I guess one of the questions I would ask the nurses is, okay, if you're in a target group, would any of you be able to go get vaccinated Monday through Friday from 9 to 5? No, because they're at work. Mm-hmm. So I think sometimes just getting folks to understand what the issue is, in a way, this is putting it in a good way, but kind of turning the tables, turning it back to them and making it very relevant to them personally, and then, then they begin to see it, and you can engage them from there. And once they become part of that, and then, okay, how would you do it? Give me some ideas. What are some things you can tell me? You're on the front lines. How would you do this? How can we make it work? And then pretty soon, they can start doing that.
The empathy goes both ways in the sense that you don't, I mean, it's easy to assume that people can't come on a Saturday because they are lazy or because they want to do something else, but you know, if, with the absence of understanding their situation, family or economic or otherwise, mm-hmm. you know, it's easy to fall into that mental model mm-hmm. of just making those assumptions. So I think, you know, it's engagement and strong empathy both directions. You know, I don't think there's a social media solution to that. Although, except to say that when we talk about technology as a solution, we often say that you need to combine high tech with high touch, depending on the people and depending on the situation. And this sounds like a high-touch situation.
Yeah, sometimes when we make new demands of employees, it's personal. It's a personal thing. Mm-hmm. And you have to kind of delve into your emotional bank account, mm-hmm. which you hopefully have with your employees. Mm-hmm. And you need to replace that at some point. It's a give and take.
Yeah. I think the idea of what I was talking about earlier as far as constructive organizational norms and things like that, you set the stage. I mean, it's not geared to address a specific issue, but you set up the stage of this employee engagement and things like this. When things like this do come along, you have that bank account, if you will, that you can deploy readily.
Well, I asked all of you, can you change the paradigm of a agency or say in the public health practice without having a systematic training or coaching or, you know, is it possible? Because all of you talked about different leadership developmental models. Mm-hmm. Is it possible that agencies are doing this on their own, or you really need to in order to do that paradigm shift, that they require coaching, or they require training, or did you try something in order to get them maybe at a different level?
When you say they, do you mean top level management? Do you mean limited level?
I'm talking about any of them, whether it's top management, or whether it's your frontline workers, how do you get everybody on the same shared vision, so to speak, and you want them operating interrelationally with each other.
I think it's important. There are certain organizations doing it well, who are, you know, functioning well and very effective and things like that. But I do think that it's important that to have discourse and talk about it, to have a shared base of knowledge or a shared concept, shared language, if you will, when you're discussing certain things, to have a context or framework. And that's why I'm big on sort of frameworks and things like that, because if you listen to many of our presentations, you saw some of the same concepts, prior participation and things like that, and all transformation research that model does is put in a certain framework for you. So it's not anything new or revolutionary, but I do think it's important to have a shared language when you talk about these sort of things, if you reflect upon them.
So I don't think that, I mean, you know, I think the supervisory training is essential and crucial, and I know that a lot of the Michigan local public health departments are adopting that. And then we also all know the drill about the fact that most of incorporate that. But I think that the certainly the from the coaching side of things, or even from the transformational leadership side of things, that there are already meetings or interactions that are going to be part of business on a day-to-day basis. And if you can start to figure out how to incorporate incrementally these principles into what's the course of business, I think that you can affect a change in culture. If you, you know, you think about the whole learning organization paradigm, it doesn't have to be what you described, which I think is crucial and important, especially for new people in the organization. It doesn't have to be that extreme chunk of time, that 4-day offsite. I think you can incorporate some of the social media tools that you've talked about in terms of sending out messages to people. Emotional intelligence work that I've been a part of really talks about sort of that those daily reminders that are necessary, because you know we can learn something in 32 hours over the course of 6 months, and 2 years later, how are we recalling it? How have we really integrated it into our toolkit? So I think there's got to be a mix and a balance of both kinds of things going on.
Just question.
Just to kind of piggyback on that.
Tell me your name and where you're from.
I'm Ruth from Rockville, Maryland, HRSA. And one of the things we're struggling in where I work at is the whole dynamic of the, what I call the different leaders, managers, supervisors. It's two different things, okay? And we've got the people who have the skill set from the professional side of whatever it is, whether it's epidemiology, statistics, you know, whatever. And they work their way up to be supervisors, but don't have the supervisory skills. Mm-hmm. And the impact that has on the employees, right, who are then sitting there going, can somebody manage me? Because at the end of the year, you're telling me I did a poor job and nobody told me I was doing anything wrong.
Right.
See, that whole conundrum. But it's because we've got working managers. Mm-hmm. You know, when you've got that situation where you've got working managers who are trying to run a program, they forget about the need to manage the staff. That's equally as important. Mm-hmm. So I guess where I was going with this was that we're looking at the actual formalization of leadership courses, and actually I just went through what's called leadership in context, and then there's a longer one that's a whole year for some of the supervisors who've been there for like forever and need to be re-engaged. Well, they do. They're the worst culprits, I say, because they forget. You know, I've been here so long, I don't need that yet. So we also are looking at the middle of the road because of lack of funding. You know, we don't have that funding stream to do all this very elaborate training for so many people, so that what we've incorporated, at least where I'm at AHIV AIDS Bureau, is within our senior leadership, senior management, in our senior management meeting, which we have once a week. So once out of the month, that weekly meeting is focused on a topic. It's a training from within. We bring the HR people, we bring the EEO people, we bring the budget people, we bring just to keep them engaged, because we know we don't have the resources to do that comprehensive course kind of thing, but they still need that skill building.
Right.
How to manage a difficult employee is the biggest one. We do that like 4 or 5 times a year. Okay? So there are other venues to doing it rather than the formalized coursework, which I actually am a big proponent of. I think it's a great thing. The only complaint we have is taking 4 days out of a month to do it.
Right.
Not only do we suffer, because you're working still while you're doing it, no
right.
doubt, okay?
Right.
But, you know, the supervisors on the top don't quite appreciate people being gone for that long, which is a whole other issue. But I really do think there's a way to do it both, you know, with the courses. But if you can't, I always say to people, you gotta be creative. Look from within. You've got people with so many skills,
right?
You know, this is not their first job. They came from wherever.
Yeah.
Find out what they were doing before. They may be an expert in something else. And that's how we've kind of dealt with it.
I think one of the important things in training is not necessarily the vehicle that you're, you know, discussing, but it's really looking at what competencies that you're trying to achieve, and then, you know, deciding the vehicle from there, looking inside, see if you have resources, things like that, because we have a mixed model but we really don't have the resources internally to address, you know, competencies 1, 2, and 3, but you know, 4, 5, and 6 we do. So that's a good, good way to think about it.
Yes.
Good. I'm Tom Wazinski from the Indiana State Department of Health. Kind of go off your idea, we did that. We did it without a consultant. We essentially, Pam and I attended the regional training, public health training centers, kind of had a passion for leadership. So we built a program. Mm-hmm. We did 16 and a half hours over the course of 11 weeks, right?
For one course.
And went from a budget of $2,000. The state health commissioner saw the success that we were doing from a grassroots level to where we got managers as well as just the worker bees, and gave us $15,000 the next year to keep going. Right. So it's really starting to grow, but again, it's that cultural shift. And we've recognized, as I think a lot of you have said, is that it's those managers that have been in place that I know leadership. I am a leader. Look at my title. I do it poorly, but look at my title. Why is it my manager doing these things that I just learned? You know, that can make things so much better in an economic crisis where we're cutting 10% of our budget and no raises and those kind of things.
I want to change it a little bit too. Okay, now. There's something, you know, my health department is going through something called Six Sigma. And so it's a process where you're trying to improve your outcomes, be more efficient in your operations. So I can be a great leader, sometimes a leader in your developing leadership skills may not necessarily translate into better efficiency of operations of how to perform this particular function. So how does that play? And then, Jay, I'm going to ask you that when we're looking at efficiencies in the public health practice settings, how does the informatics, I guess I want to say, play a role, or can play a role in improving efficiencies of operations? And then I'm going to get back to you guys with the leadership and the coaching. How can that play a role in improving efficiencies of an operation or a function?
I would simply answer that by saying that whatever systems you're using, capturing the metrics that allow you to create the accountabilities is essential. You have to hold people accountable. From a supervisory management point of view, or from in any sense of public health, is we need to be measuring what we're trying to accomplish to get a sense of how well we're doing and making adjustments as needed. And I think one advantage of the more automated we get in our systems, again, these are any kinds of systems, back end or front end, more times than not, you can build in automated tracking of what we're doing, which could then be leveraged.
Well, I thought you were going to say something slightly a little bit different. And what I thought you were going to say is that some of our local health departments, and I'm more from a local, and I know public health has to do with more than just local and state health department.
Right.
There are different settings for public health practice, wherever, what setting that you're in. But I was looking at that, sometimes because of lack of resources and whatever, we're not always as up to date with the informatics or the automation and whatever. And so
I would say that in the leadership courses I've taught, I'm seeing more and more where basic knowledge and technology is a core competence. And I would argue in public health it needs to be. The panel we moderated this morning about mobile technology and public health, was attended by about 100 people, and about 5 or 6 of them afterwards came up and said they should be a plenary session because everybody in public health needs to know this, but unfortunately they don't. So that is the intersection problem. That's why we decided to get this paper in the health administration section instead of a different one, because we think all of you, like all of us, need to hear these things.
Just to make a plug for the Continuing Education Institute, there was a Web 2.0 session that was held on Saturday or Sunday of this week, so in the future you might be interested.
And I just have one last comment. I know that in the public health world, clearly being efficient is really, really important, but we can't forget about being effective.
And we often focus on the efficiency part. And if we're not effective, the efficiency is for naught.
Yes.
Right. And that's what we stress in our new supervisor development program. It's about being effective. And that's why we stress the 7 habits of highly effective people. But to get to your question and answer that question really quickly, because I know it's almost time to go, we do have a set of 15 mandatory HR courses to really make our supervisors efficient in their supervisory role as a manager or supervisor. And then we've got those soft skills with those 8 leadership development courses where we work on making them a really good leader. So it's a combination of being efficient as well as effective.
Yeah, and I don't think necessarily have to be at odds with each other. Mm-hmm. Productivity and the and the training and things like that. If you can integrate that and really make the value proposition, if you will, for training, you show how it does affect the bottom line, and you do that through evaluating the training over time and start doing ROI, lack of a better term, on the training.
And that's what we're doing.
Exactly, so ROI analysis.
Well, I want to thank our panelists for being here.